Good morning. It is August 28th, 2025. We're here on location, Coastside Edition with Sophia Lane. I'm Sophia Lane. And today I am on Main Street in Half Moon Bay, California with the esteemed Antonio Lopez. Good morning, Antonio.
What's good, Sophia? Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning. You know, I'm pretty excited because we got coffee.
Yeah, we got coffee. I'm alive. I'm being revived from my zombie state. I'm excited to talk about poems, Half Moon Bay, education, politics, whatever we need.
And you know what's so cool is, like, you have such an amazing and diverse background that you're like a legend in many
I just try stuff and see what sticks.
What have you tried? Tell us a little bit about you.
So I'm from East Palo Alto, so it's County San Mateo as well, but on the southernmost point, the other extreme in the county. I'm the son of Mexican immigrants. My mom and dad came from the same village in Michoacan, Mexico. They came in the 80s. And I tell folks all the time, the only reason my dad had the opportunity to get his citizenship is because a Republican president gave amnesty to some 3 million Mexicans, President Reagan in the 80s.
Wow.
And he was able to get his green card and then his citizenship. So it's interesting how we live in a time when that seems like such a pipe dream, right?
Yeah.
It's for folks to get a chance at that American dream. Grew up, went to Title I school down the street. Then I went to Menlo, fancy schmancy school. But that really set me up, kicked my butt academically, prepared me to go to Duke. And then I got an MFA at Rutgers. And then I lived
at Rutgers. I've heard of that school.
Yeah.
That's in New Jersey, right?
Yep. Yeah. So I went to the Rutgers Newark campus.
I was in New Brunswick, but, you know, we could still be friends.
Yeah, definitely.
It's all good.
Yeah.
So MFA, that's awesome. In a specific area?
Yeah, poetry. So poetry is something that I fell in love with when I was a teenager in high school, writing short stories, writing poems, and just realizing, like, the power of a story, the power of humanizing a community. You know, yesterday in my class, I teach at CSM Coastside, and I taught my students, like, the importance of stillness, of slowing down, of honoring the things you take for granted and the people you take for granted, whether it's an orange or a farm worker or your mother's hands. Like, it's about paying attention to the beauty around you. And I'd like to think that part of my own biography of growing up in a place like EPA that was stereotyped when I was a kid and seen as a violent, dangerous place, and showing the beauty, or at least the complexity of it.
Yeah.
Like, that is what set me up to be a storyteller, whether it was when I ran for government or whether it's now as poet laureate for the county. So I think at the heart of what I do is, like, what is the story that needs to be told here?
Right.
What's missing from the narrative?
Yeah. And it was really cool because you were so kind as to invite me to listen in a little bit on your English class that you're teaching at CSM Coastside last night. So I got to see you a little bit in action with the students and take a couple pictures, which I will share with folks as well. But what struck me is what you said about everyone has a story. And I thought that was pretty cool in terms of inspiring your young people in the classroom.
Yeah, because a lot of folks, like, there's this one wonderful woman who's in her 60s and she's a florist, and she's like, you know, comes in all humble saying, oh, well, you know, I'm not as advanced as a student in my native country. I only finished so-and-so grade. And I'm like, yeah, but you think about the wisdom and the beauty of the work that you do. And I can just imagine her, like, speaking to the flowers when she waters them. Like, there's such a beauty in folks. And, you know, we have all these kinds of labels about degrees and where you went to school. And especially in Silicon Valley, there's such a status thing.
Totally.
And we neglect, like, again, like, just the cultural richness. And I think part of what I love about art so much is that it doesn't discriminate. It doesn't care, like, where you went to school or what income bracket. Like, it's all about paying attention and just having the ear and heart to really be still and linger on people's lives.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so it just makes me a better listener, I guess, in that sense.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Oh, wait, here, look. This is the Half Moon Bay Library. You've been here before?
Yeah.
Because I know you're getting used to Half Moon Bay. You're starting to just get to know the town.
Quite a few times.
Yeah.
I was for a leadership academy that met here every month.
Oh, nice.
It's beautiful.
Well, and it's amazing because it's so diverse what the offerings are in there. Some people don't realize, they do still have books. And you can, oftentimes I will say the way I get books from the Half Moon Bay Library or any of the San Mateo County libraries, because they're all connected, is through the app that they have on your phone. And you can basically search for any book that you have in your mind that you want to have it. And probably somewhere within San Mateo County, they'll have that book, and then they'll ship it over to the location where you want to pick it up. And guess what I looked up this morning?
Mm.
A really cool book of poems. It's called Antification.
Yeah.
You've heard of that one, I'm sure.
I've heard of it. Heard it's of somewhere it. In the recesses of my mind.
So yeah, tell us about Antification.
It's my first book of poetry. It's got a real wild, it's a red book, and it's got a fist holding a pencil that's piercing a tongue, but the pencil's also a knife. It's actually very in your face. And I think the whole point of that book is it's trying to, you know, when you're a first gen kid, there's like this celebration, rightly so, right, of you quote unquote make it.
Yeah.
You go to a college, you're able to sort of get that education that not only you but your parents fought for. But we don't talk about what happens after that when you're in these institutions and you're really struggling with things like identity, language, assimilation, English, alienating from your parents, like the ideas of like your parents can't read or won't read your thesis statement.
Yeah.
Your parents may not make your graduation. You know, these sort of very real struggles and how isolating it feels. But at the same time, it's also a weapon. And writing has always been a weapon, not in like a violent way, but just in terms of really telling truth to power, really having a sharp, critical way of looking at the world, and also inspiring people.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I freaking started writing, because I would write these op-eds, and rich white kids I never met would say, like, Antonio, I had no idea this about your background, but it inspired me so much, or it made my mother cry. I hadn't even met this person's mother. And they made him cry. So, like, for me, I'm like, maybe there's something happening here that's important for me to develop this skill set to be able to penetrate people's hearts and really have them see things, even if they never stepped into my shoes. The writing and the art and really chiseling it can help them to understand an experience maybe they're not able to understand or able to access otherwise.
Yeah.
So gentrification is sort of my pun of, like, saying, you know, instead of gentrification, right, which is this process of like displacing people, increasing cost of living, how can we gentrify the world? How can we sort of subvert that idea and work within these systems to upend them or to change them or to just maybe change the trajectory a little bit of the outcome?
Yeah.
So
that's really cool.
That's the whole book.
That's the whole book. And to do so through the power of art, like you said, to be able to say a statement directly is one thing with evidence and facts and that's kind of thing. Like, that's one way to make an argument, if you will, but the power of persuasion of the arts, be they visual arts or music or spoken word or poetry or novels or whatever it is, that's so powerful.
Well, there's something about poetry in general that, like, there's a great writer, Jericho Brown. There's many great writers, but I remember sitting down with him at a conference, and he told us, you know, because he knows I kind of come from that, not spoken word, but that tradition of like telling truth to power.
Mm-hmm.
A poem is different than a speech, than a statistics report. It can riff off of these things, but what makes a poem a poem as opposed to another form, a research form? And I think what it is that it has this crystallized emotional crux that transcends logic, that transcends statistics, but that can still tap into some kind of essence of what it's talking about.
Yeah.
And that can move people in a way that maybe a statistics report has a truth. Maybe there's an objective truth, but the poem can grab at a larger universal truth that goes beyond the particular bounds of that study.
Yeah.
And that's what makes a poem, in theory, so powerful, because it gets at a larger truth of what it's trying to say. And that's not bounded by your method, right? Or the social science. Well, what is your method? Who are you citing? Yeah. Who's the scholars? Did you cite this person? Did you make sure that 1994 report was included? Like, you know, all that stuff. It's like, the jargon aside, it's about the heart of what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
And it's part of the alchemy of being an artist is like having the compass emotionally to navigate through that.
Yeah.
And understanding how to tap into the right images.
It almost sounds like it's kind of a way to connect more to the philosophy of life. Right?
In a way,
You get to kind of get to those existential
issues. All themes have been written about already. War, loss, poverty, whatever. We're just remixing all the time.
Yeah.
And so to be an artist is you have to be part of that tradition and know the tradition.
Yeah.
Right? Like I'm working on this like novel, and I got this line. It's like, you know, Agamemnon got nothing on Don Alfonso's hospitality, right? Because the Odyssey, the Greeks were known to be hospitable.
Yes.
Right?
And they still are philoxenia. That's the word for it.
Right, anfitrión, right? Yeah. And so to know you're part of a larger universal tradition.
Yeah.
And I think that's the that, that's the power of like art, yo. It's like it creates empathy. Like it trains you to say your bubble is not the only bubble, that there's so many other cultures, and that you should learn to embrace other cultures and learn to love, understand them and appreciate them. And literature is one of the few places where we can still do that as a human species.
It's pretty amazing.
Influence you.
Yep. Yep.
It's a big old truck,
It's a big old truck.
That's an 18-wheeler.
That's a big one.
What is in those big bales?
Yeah, I don't know. It's got to be something organic, though. They're like those fluffy. I'm guessing straw or hay.
But you got to embrace it being half Mumbai. Everything is so freaking close.
You know what it is? It's probably for the field work they're doing over there to revamp the field over at Cunha Intermediate
School. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
With the Boys and Girls Club of the Coast Side. So, yeah, they're moving. So we're good. I was going to mention, too, your recent designations to San Mateo County Poet Laureate. Mm. That's pretty awesome.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, yeah. So what does that mean? What does that entail when you're the Poet Laureate?
It means they get a lot less hate mail than no one else.
That's nice.
I didn't like that poem you submitted at some obscure magazine that no one cares about. I get less hate mail.
That's
it's great.
Good for you.
People are less upset.
Good for you. I think you deserve that.
Listen, for anybody who wants to run for something, just know that, like, it's not for the faint of heart, and you're going to lose some friends, but you're going to love what you do. So just know that going in.
It's super important. I can vouch to that. So poetry. Okay, could I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you have something on hand, maybe like kind of fresh that you've been working
always,
on?
That always.
That you can share with us?
Always, off the dome.
Awesome.
Always.
All right, let's go.
All right. So this is one. This is the final poem in a series of poems that plays this idea of real world math problems. You remember when you were in school, you had those textbooks, and at the end of like the chapter, it's like a real world math problem. So I kind of play off that.
Oh yeah.
Kind of play off that because this book is about my middle school experiences.
Yeah. Okay.
Real world math problems. Final. The executive director of a nonprofit starts off his PowerPoint with a map showing two cities in the Bay Area. They are exactly 5 miles from each other. One has a population with an average lifespan of 82. The other, 63. These are the cities of Atherton and East Palo Alto. He clicks next. You're still stuck on the last slide. The air in this Y sucked from your lungs. You're not in middle school anymore. You can't flip your number two. The gangs don't choose between red or blue. They wear fancy suits and cater sliced fruit. You're in politics, fool, a councilman at a county leadership conference. It's barely breakfast. An Asian businessman during Q&A raises his hand. How can this be? A city surrounded by so many resources in such need. And all look at you, your mouth a busted pipe bleeding onto hardwood. It's haunt of drills, suicide. Where art thou, Rogelio, Keith, Dre, my assassins of the court of pine? How long do you have till the wellspring of your past dries up to see your backside?
Wow. It feels like some personal experience in there.
Definitely. Well, all poetry, you know, and I talked about this with my students yesterday, like we have to distinguish between the author and the speaker.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes, like, it's like our personas.
Yeah.
You know, it's our different layers, but there is a slight difference. But of course, all poetry is rooted in a reality.
Yeah.
Especially
personal
poetry.
Personal experience,
right? Absolutely.
Like personal experience that's kind of drives what you do. And like you said, you kind of pull out which layer you're going to present in that particular piece of art, be it a poem or, you know, whatever it is, a painting.
It could be 14-year-old Antonio, Mayor Antonio, 25-year-old Antonio, right?
Yeah,
just sort of depends on whatever urges you to write at that moment.
Yeah. So that's pretty amazing to be able to share that with your students in your class.
Yeah, I mean, and again, like, they all have their stories. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the problem, too, is that we have such a fancy schmancy idea of what a poet is and isn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were taught that it's Shakespeare. And it is. We're taught that it's these old class, all these dead folks. And, yeah, there's a tradition, but poetry's alive.
Yeah.
And poetry's all about what is relevant in the moment. And again, what is being felt. Like, the Arabs have in Arabic, the word for poet is sha'ir. And it's an active participle, meaning like a swimmer, runner, right? The doer. Mm-hmm. It's a doer of a verb, meaning and the root of sha'id is sha'ain ra, which is to feel.
Mm-hmm.
So literally in Arabic poet is the one who feels.
Yeah.
A professional feeler, yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah, totally makes sense.
So as long as you have feelings, you're a poet.
You're
That's
a
what
poet.
I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Like it's not a thing you train yourself to do. Like
right.
that you go to school and get an MFA. Like that's one way.
Yeah.
But just it's about training your heart to be able to trust it to take you somewhere.
I almost even feel like whenever I try to read a poem, I have to slow down a lot more
exactly.
than when I read a book. Or when I'm just reading information that's, like, factual, I can get through it pretty quickly. But, like, you know, my family sometimes makes fun of me because, like, it takes me forever to read, like a pulpy book. It's like, okay, fine, I can get through it pretty quick when it's mostly, like, plot-based.
Mm.
But when it's, like, a piece of literature...
Exactly.
Then, it like, even if it's modern literature, it doesn't have to be, like, old, dusty literature like you were talking about earlier, like, classical stuff. That takes forever, too. But, like, any piece of writing that... has its words intentionally chosen, like every word's intentionally chosen, and I find, you know, it takes me a long time, and I find especially with poems it's even more so. Like I have to stop and think about each word, and like sometimes I'll reread it like 5 times to be able to like get the gist mm-hmm. of kind of what it was about.
Well, because we're so trained to like have, you know, we treat language as like this empty vessel of information where I just convey a message, but you don't actually chew on the language I use.
Yeah.
Whereas poetry has a different set of logics. Like it could be psychological.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
it's not the logic of communication. It's about the logic of the speaker's interiority, about
yeah.
the heart, about one of the students yesterday wrote a poem about the 6 C's, and the 6 C's is a metaphor of their relationship with the beloved
yeah.
and how vast his grief is in relation to the speaker's, the beloved's unrequited love.
Yeah.
So using the metaphor of the ocean to sort of articulate this vastness,
yes.
but this solitude.
Yeah.
That's a different kind of logic than saying I am lonely
right.
or I miss you.
Right.
This, you know, that doesn't capture the depth.
It's so much more indirect.
Exactly.
Right?
And so what poetry yeah. does is it upends our logic of how we think about language, and it forces us to slow down to understand the universe of the poem,
mm-hmm.
how it, 'cause every poem is a contract. It sort of tells you this is the relationship you're going to have as a reader.
Mm-hmm.
Understand the sound, the image. The contract may change, but each poem has its own document of terms and conditions, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
And so being able to appreciate the structural integrity of each distinct one
yeah.
and then understanding its universe and really immersing yourself in it and slowing down, that's the biggest thing, just slowing the frick down.
Yeah.
We live in such a fragmented world
yeah.
that we're so scattered, we're so busy, we're so hyper spliced, and
yeah.
poetry
instant gratification right?
exactly
all about instant and
exactly
poetry is like the opposite,
it's it doesn't make
yeah.
money
yeah.
no one listens to it, no one reads it. It's this lofty thing that
you not no one come on
well you never see Steve Jobs well
yeah.
not Steve Jobs anymore but
you don't see
Tim Cook or these
yeah, yeah.
you know Mark Zuckerberg, you never see the titans of industry saying
yeah.
I'm gonna start this with a poem.
Yeah.
We do poems when there's like a tragedy.
Yeah.
We only do poems now when unspeakable grief hits us.
That's
think
right.
about it.
That's
think
true.
About it. Think about
that's
it. The
true.
Only time people do poems are weddings, funerals, and maybe inaugurations.
Yeah.
Although with Trump, probably not.
Yeah, yeah.
But poetry is the last remnant of like something else that's missing in our lives.
That's interesting. The use, I hadn't thought about the way we as a society even use poetry, especially in the public space. It does tend to be that reactive, right? React to a death or react to a wedding, but not that proactive kind of way.
Because it's the only, sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, no, not at
it's,
all.
It's the only, it's only when, in a modern capitalist society, it's only when grief hits you so freaking hard and you have nothing else to say.
Yeah.
Because what else do you say in a school shooting? My thoughts and prayers.
Yeah.
It's like a parody of Republican
hollow
lines.
Words.
Hollow
yeah.
words. But it's only poetry, or at least at this point, it's
yeah.
only things like poetry.
I mean,
poetry.
It could be policy, we know. But
yeah, well,
you know,
I know, right?
But at least for now, as
yeah.
far as the
yeah.
immediate aftermath.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah.
it's only poetry that really allows you to
yeah.
access a kind of authentic relationship with the now.
Yeah.
Like, when we had the shooting, like, in Half Moon Bay.
Yeah.
And we lost 7 farm workers. Like, how do you make sense of the worst shooting in the county's history, and it hit 7 farm workers, 5 Asian, 2 Latino. How do you make sense of the ABC7 saying we're investigating, we're learning about things now, but then this we is like, well, these farm workers have always been here.
Yeah.
The conditions have always been here.
Yeah.
We've always needed housing.
Yeah.
So how do you articulate these inequities
yeah.
in a way that is not like pedantic
yes.
or me on my soapbox,
yeah.
but is articulating this like real rage, but also grief.
Yeah.
Like, also real deep grief. Sadness.
Yeah.
You know, like, I cried for hours when we buried Marciano. Like, I cried so long because, and that's, I think that's the thing about poetry. Like, it has to save you. You know, Gwendolyn Brooks, great poet, passed away about a year ago, said, like, the poem should liberate you first. You know,
like liberate your heart, right?
Yeah, it doesn't have to. It doesn't have to be this kumbaya utopia.
Yeah, yeah.
But and it doesn't even have to. You don't even have to necessarily feel good about it.
Yeah.
But at the end of it, you should be changed with the relationship, whatever you're talking about.
Yep.
A little bit, just like a little bit. A needle.
Yeah, that makes a lot. That makes a lot of sense, just in terms of how we view what the impacts or the benefits or the opportunities are with the arts and with poetry specifically. It definitely is very clear how your life experience impacted your poetry. I'm curious how your poetry now, like, fed back. It was a few years ago, I know that you were mayor, but as, like you said, it's a very different role, and probably there's like three people on the planet that have achieved those two pretty amazing achievements that you had of poet laureate and a mayor. How do you feel there are ways that as you were governing as mayor, and you've been involved, you know, as an activist and advocate, I'm not sure what the right preferred word is, I tend to like advocate, but how is your poetry, or have there been ways where you feel like your poetry was, I don't know, something like an asset that you were able to leverage through that, through those experiences?
Well, fundamentally, and excuse my French, it was hard for me, it was hard for me to bullshit.
Yeah.
Right? Because a lot of politics is BS.
Yeah.
And it's not even, and I don't mean BS like policy, I just mean like inauthenticity.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that people abhor from their politicians, Republican, Democrat, black, white, whatever, is inauthenticity.
Yeah.
When they're not actually speaking from what they say.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about policy. I'm talking about, like, are they actually expressing what makes them tick?
Yeah.
Whether it's public safety, whether it's housing, whether it's child care, prenatal care, what have you, maternal care.
Yeah. Are they being real?
Are they being real?
Yeah.
And as a poet, I know nothing else but be real. I know nothing else than to give you my most unbridled, unapologetic self.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'd couch it given the meeting, but like the essence of what I'm saying, like I care about public safety because for a long time, we grew up in a community that didn't have that.
Yeah.
Like that.
I'm going to tell
you. You can spin it how you want.
Yeah.
But that is my hunger for this community.
Yeah.
Right. And that is why I'm advocating for, you know, flock safety cameras in the intersections. That's why I want these speed bumps on Kavanaugh, because then we don't have another DeAndre Stamper getting run over.
Yeah.
So it, like, I think it allows me to stay rooted. I also think from a more practical sense, it makes me a better speaker.
Yeah.
Because I'm just speaking to you from someone who actively trains his brain and mind every day to tap into myself.
Yeah.
Right? To know myself.
Yeah.
I'm not giving you a talking point. I don't prepare my talking points.
Yeah.
I've done it for other electeds.
Yeah.
But the reason why I don't have to is because I'm always exercising my own obsessions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And tapping into them for better or for worse.
You've trained your brain.
Absolutely.
To communicate.
Because that is the essence of my art.
Yeah.
You know, Alice Dark, one of my MFA fiction teachers, shout out to Alice Dark. She says to our class, like, follow your obsessions. And as an artist, like, that is the best advice.
Yeah.
Just follow that.
Yeah.
I don't care what it is. Follow it.
Yeah.
Not people, obviously. But I'm speaking in terms of your mind.
Yeah. Oh,
don't follow a person.
Follow people, creepy.
Don't.
Follow
your mind. Follow your heart. Follow the thing. And, you know, unfortunately, we live in a world where if it's like, if it doesn't pay, it's not worth following.
Yeah.
That's why art is such a hard thing to do, because you have to go against the grain in so many ways.
Yeah.
Right?
It's true.
Because we live in a world that's so product-driven, project-manager-driven.
Commercialized,
startup world.
And competitive, too, right?
Very
like people, there's that competitive, especially, I feel like, in recent years. And I can say, like, even as a parent, like, you get all this pressure to compete. Right? Like your kid has to have the best XYZ.
100%.
If they don't do all the activities, they're going to lose.
Yeah.
If they don't do all the, they don't go to like the top, you know, university.
Research one. They didn't go to, you know, Sudan to volunteer or do some Peace Corps thing.
Then you're going to lose in life. And I feel like that creates such a hyper competitive, fast paced urgency around almost like our Darwinian way of life that makes it really hard to create and foster culture that's about working together.
And it's anathema to community building.
Yeah.
You know, what I told my students yesterday, and I told my Monday class as well, because I was teaching at the San Mateo campus, is to, you have to create a community.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't just be by yourself and be a writer.
Yeah.
You have to be in conversation with other writers who's also in dialogue with you, who's also obsessing over the same things. It could be a community that's ethnic driven, like Black or Latino. It could also be subject matter. It could also be genre. It could just be people just hanging out at a cafe.
Yeah.
But finding folks in communion, kindred spirits, is so important as a writer.
Yeah.
We're social creatures, and what you were saying exactly about the ways we're so competitive, like, it's gonna kill us, yo.
It is.
It already is.
Terrible. We know. Hey, I see another truck coming. Why don't we walk down to CSM Coast Side,
and
we can
it.
Speak a little bit about that too when we get there. I'm pretty sure there's some kind of like cork pellets or something in there. So that's gonna be my guess. I'm not going to, like, stop him and ask, because that would be awkward.
No. It's probably some...
I'm going to peek.
No, it's just a blue-collar person just working it.
Yeah, it's just working it.
Just say hi to them. See?
Yeah, you have peace signs.
You just,
That's my guess. It's the fill. But we'll see. We'll find out tomorrow.
Yeah.
By there.
That's the beauty of Half Moon Bay. You'll figure it out. Somebody will tell you. Somebody knows. Within a two-block radius, what's going on.
That's my guess. Exactly. And they probably know six people that know also.
100%.
So we're walking now north from the library on Parisima Street towards the CSM Coastside campus. And you said you're teaching the class here, and you're teaching something in San Mateo too?
So I'm teaching English 100, or now it's called 1000.
Yeah.
But same difference.
Yeah.
English 100 and English 110.
Oh,
the
cool.
100 class is right here at CSM. And in fact, what really makes me happy is that it's one of the first classes we're having at that campus. Like, it's brand spanking new.
It is.
And
it's really amazing.
And we were concerned in terms of enrollment.
Yeah.
But I've got 15 students.
That's
and
a
it's
great
the first,
class.
It's the first semester I'm teaching.
Yeah.
And the dean is very supportive. President Manuel is very supportive. Everybody's committed. And, you know, just for those folks listening, we're in the works of doing a creative writing class in the spring that I'll be hopefully teaching.
Oh, wow. That would be amazing.
So if anyone's interested,
we'll keep our eyes up for it. And you mentioned to me previously you have a few high school students in there too, right?
I've got three high schoolers.
Three high schoolers.
They sit right in front. They're so awkward and shy, but they're also very smart.
Yeah.
You know, it's just we were talking about it earlier. Like, COVID really did a number on these kids, yo.
Yeah.
It's hard for them.
Tough.
It's hard for them to talk to other people.
It is. And it's tough when they miss that stage of their development, right? When it was developing normally. That was a tough thing, but I know, and it's pretty cool because I think a lot of people don't realize that by Ed Code, high school students can take community college classes.
100%. And in this county, in San Mateo County, it is free for every single resident, regardless of legal status. You have the ability to take free college classes.
Free college classes.
And by the way, our JCCs are like the top 10 in the nation.
Oh yeah, we're
CSM's super lucky. Ranked number 6, I think.
Wow.
Like in the country.
I'm not surprised.
Their football
it's amazing.
Team has won the chip like multiple years.
Yeah.
Like, this is not some rinky dink local. No, this is like world class free education, and they have the TAG program. So that after 2 years, if you get all your credits, requirements, and go, you will automatically get into a UC.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And you save money.
You save money.
Because you're taking the same classes for free.
It's crazy. And so you can graduate high school because you get, and I know there are some restrictions typically that the high schools get in place.
You got to take certain classes first.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Be ready.
Yeah. However, taking a class under dual enrollment, they get credit both for high school and for college. It's
absolutely.
Two for one.
And it's like, again, we're right down the street from Half Moon Bay
High.
I am floored at how many resources. That's what I tell these kids, you know what I'm saying? It's like,
it's out there.
You don't know how good we have it.
Yeah,
we've got so many resources in the Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
I don't care what zip code or where you grew up. I grew up in EPA. We were... You know, right across the street from Stanford, we had a different experience altogether, but we still have we have more access than ever to world-class resources.
We really do.
And it's just a matter of, like, being hungry, asking questions, talking to the right person, and that's it. And people reward that.
Yeah. No, totally. And I think that's the key thing. Even when your communities that are, like, substantially less wealthy or substantially less funded than neighbors are, which I think both Half Moon Bay and East Palo Alto...
Yep.
fall into that general category. 100%. there are resources where if you evolve what you do and how you do it, there are resources there. You just might need to do things a little bit differently to get them, right?
And I would also, absolutely. And I would also say, you know, post George Floyd, post pandemic, I think with the pandemic, one of the silver linings, one of the only silver linings I think it gave us,
yeah,
is a universal language for inequity. Everybody has some story about someone got sick, yeah, or laid off. We were a captive audience to some of the injustices, like whether it was George Floyd, whether it was access to education, yep, whether it was learning. Like, we all knew, hey, something, the game is up. Something isn't, this system isn't working for everybody.
Yeah.
And I think in the 90s, we weren't quite there yet. We were kind of there, but now we're really there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
So now, now we have the ear of legislatures,
yeah,
and folks in positions of power. President Manuel, you know, we're all working together to, yeah, to try to fix this.
Yep.
And so it's a beautiful time to really seize the moment and advance not just you, but your family.
Yeah.
Right. Social upward mobility.
Yep. And you're right. The resources are there. And we're very fortunate. One of our local patrons, if it will, Joe Cochette, helped build this building.
That's what I'm saying.
This beautiful new arm of the College of San Mateo here, and we have 6 classes, you know, so big gratitude to Joe, because
absolutely,
we couldn't have done it without him, and just all the people that have come together dedicated to make this happen, because, like, let's face it, it is, can be a little bit tough to get over the hill when you're at Half Moon Bay, as
very
we call
tough,
it,
especially when there's an accident on the 92,
and there's an accident 92, if you don't have a car,
absolutely.
You know, and you're relying on a bus, and it's nice, I think there is the Lyft service still that, mm-hmm, that students can take if they're taking a class in Half Moon, in San Mateo from Half Moon Bay. But it's nice to have it right here. It's a really nice.
And there,
right
and
here.
Just, I think, just more fundamentally, what it signals is to the community, you matter.
Yes.
We want to invest in you.
Yep.
We know that we see you, we hear you, and we're going to move mountains literally and figuratively to,
yeah,
give you the same education across the hill.
Yeah.
And I think, to me, you know, when I was growing up in EPA, you could tell the teachers that cared and the ones that didn't.
Yeah.
And there's something even pre-linguistic that as a middle schooler, you can intuit when the teacher is going to go above and beyond for you.
Yeah.
And I think when you don't know if you love yourself yet, or if you grew up in a community where you may not get that love at home or whatever, that's such a transformational thing.
Yeah.
When people take the time to say you matter.
Yeah.
And we're going to go halfway. And, you know, I think that's part of making a change.
Yeah. So. It is.
So that's why I'm so, like, humble to be a part of something bigger here.
Yeah.
And I've only been teaching for about 3 weeks.
Hey, it's a good 3 weeks, though.
Oh,
it has. That's the start, right?
I enjoy it thoroughly. Yeah. The staff here is phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's world-class,
yeah,
you know, technology. It's technology I don't even know how to use yet.
Hey, you'll get there.
Yeah. They got all these smart boards, AI boards.
Yeah, yeah.
Does
it read your mind and it couldn't, like,
at this point, it probably is. I'm careful to talk to it.
Can it write poems yet, though?
You know, that's a great question. I don't think so. I think that's where we got AI, yeah, beat still.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it can only regurgitate what's already there.
Right.
But poetry.
It's only rehashing something.
Yeah, there's a logic. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it could probably write, like, a pretty interesting poem.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's a good philosophical question. It's above my pay grade. Maybe we'll make a class out of it.
Yeah,
maybe,
yeah,
I'll teach that class.
That'd be kind of interesting.
And we'll interact with AI.
That'd be interesting.
I do have a friend of mine. Shout out to Tracy Fuad.
Mm-hmm.
She has this book of poetry. She's a Kurdish poet. I went to Rutgers, mm-hmm, with her.
Yeah.
Just to give you a flavor of, like, how diverse my cohort was.
Yeah.
And one of her first books was called Da Da.
Yeah.
And it was literally a series, if I understand it right. Forgive,
yeah,
me, Tracy, if I got it wrong. But basically, she would put something in Google Translate, and,
yeah,
Google Translate would spit it back.
Oh.
And it would just be an infinite loop of that.
Interesting.
And the book is a product of that kind of recursiveness.
Oh, that's super interesting.
Yeah, she plays a lot with that kind of stuff.
It's almost like bordering on performative art in a way,
yeah,
right? Like, mm-hmm, not like, but like kind of the transcript of a performative art piece or something like that. That's super interesting.
Yeah. So, wow, maybe we got to read her work and kind of see. And of course, this was pre-ChatGPT.
Yeah.
This is Google Translate.
This is just Google Translate.
Which is a fossil
simple.
Compared to what's,
yeah,
happening now,
yeah,
with,
totally,
NVIDIA and all that stuff.
Totally. It's amazing to think of the possibilities and how things will evolve and even how we communicate poetry and things like that.
And I think that's what makes it so trippy to be here in Coastside, because, like, we're so close yet so far to that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, Google's, yeah, 5 minutes from my house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or maybe 10.
Yeah.
Right?
And you think it's a world away.
Yeah.
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 It's amazing.
But it's a technology that the entire globe has been inalterably changed,
yeah,
by.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the cool thing. I think by accessing different kinds of information, having these kinds of conversations across, outside of our normal bubbles, that's how we get to see the whole world, and it does give us insights on ourselves too.
Mm.
So, well, thank you so much.
Yeah, no worries.
It's been
Sophia.
So fun to talk with you today.
Nah, it's been dope.
I hope we could do it again sometime.
Nah, we will.
Thank you for everything that you're doing.
We gotta find another trucker to get a bushel of hay.
Yeah, we're gonna find the next like big construction project, like follow around, just so we could hear the truck sounds.
Yeah, there's something cool about it.
It is something cool about it. It's all cool. Thank you, Antonio.
Appreciate you. Yeah.
Take care. On Location Coastside Edition with Sophia Lane is produced by Bright Now Media. Stay tuned for our next episode coming soon. And thanks for listening.